This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, June 16th. I'm Tom Rogers. Coming up, Amy Guida's Legal Issues in the News tackles the issue of metadata, what it is and what it means for you. We'll also get a forecast coming up from AM 580 meteorologist Ed Kieser. First, the news. FutureGen, the $1.8 billion low-emission coal project in Mattoon, will continue despite the financial withdrawal of the U.S. Department of Energy. Angela Griffin is the president of the economic development group Coals Together, and she says she hopes the next administration will support FutureGen starting in January of next year.
Very few pieces of the project have been derailed. This is a setback, but we were all expecting it. We're not at all concerned that FutureGen will not be built in Mattoon. Please don't put us on the obituary page yet, because we are not at all dead.
Last week, the DOE terminated FutureGen, arguing it would exceed the project's budget. Griffin claims the DOE's decision was politically motivated because the agency already spent millions of dollars on FutureGen.
Which makes this thing all that much more atrocious, that the federal government can spend $40 million and then walk away from it and empty-handed with nothing after spending that kind of taxpayer money.
Griffin says work on the FutureGen project will continue to stay on schedule. She says this week geological experts will conduct a seismological survey, and plans to purchase the land for the project by this August are still well underway. The Champaign County's Nursing Home Board meets tonight to look into whether to hire a consulting firm to either advise the financially troubled nursing home or to manage it. That latter agreement with Management Performance Associates would be similar to one rejected by the Champaign County Board last year. Under its terms, Nursing Home Administrator Andrew Buffenbarger would be an employee of NPA instead of the county. Nursing Home Board Chairman Charles Lansford says a majority on the board are impressed by NPA's success in other counties. Skeptics like board member Jason Hirschbruner says they need to see more specifics about what the firm would do for Champaign County. A subcommittee of the Nursing Home Board was to meet in closed session over the weekend about the NPA contract. The Champaign County Board will have the final say on any contract. The board has another decision on the nursing home on its agenda this Thursday. It'll vote on whether to lend another $592,000 to the home. Officials say that's enough money to see it through the end of the fiscal year on November 30th. The city of Urbana is putting together a commission and a city staff member to develop public arts projects, but Alderwoman Danielle Chenoweth says the city's arts budget needs one more item, money set aside to fund art projects. Chenoweth will try to get that money added to the next city budget at the upcoming council meeting tonight. She proposes funding public arts grants in next year's budget with $76,000 in city TIF funds.
That's $2 per capita for arts programming, and I think that that's the minimum that we as a progressive community should be funding, and that puts us medium to low in comparison with our neighbors for what we do in terms of funding for the arts.
That's how Chenoweth made the argument at last Monday's City Council Committee of the Whole meeting, but not everyone agrees, notably Urbana Mayor Laurel Prussing. Her proposal would have any grants for artists paid for with private donations and money raised at local arts events. At that meeting, Prussing said the money budgeted for a public arts coordinator would go a long way toward getting money for arts project grants.
But if you're spending to try to get art into the city, I think that you have to look at the results. And I don't believe that we have to go out and buy everything and have it all be bought in the first year.
But Chenoweth says a public arts program without any money set aside for funding art does not live up to its name. She'll try to get the funding put in the budget tonight. It would be her last chance, as the council is scheduled to vote on a final budget plan tonight as well. Indiana's Court of Appeals is scheduled to hear arguments July 8th in the legal fight for control of the Terre Haute Mayor's Office. Former Democratic Mayor Kevin Burke claims Republican Mayor Duke Bennett should not have been allowed to take office because his candidacy violated the Hatch Act. That's a federal law that limits the political activity of employees of some not-for-profits that receive federal money. Bennett formerly was the director of operations at Hamilton Center, which operates an early Head Start program funded by federal grants. Burke is arguing that state law requires Bennett be removed from office, and Burke, as the person receiving the second most votes, should become mayor again. Burke appealed a Vigo Superior Court judge's ruling that he saw no evidence indicating that Bennett had willfully flouted the Hatch Act. Sudden thunderstorms, packing hail, and 60-mile-an-hour winds caused another round of damage to parts of central and northern Illinois yesterday. Reports of damage from the front included roof damage and tree limbs down in Seymour, Sydney, Hoopston, and the McLean County towns of Colfax and in Hudson, where a limb fell at a cookout and caused a minor injury. Almost 250 ComEd crews have been working to restore service to about 25,000 customers without power after a morning front. About 140,000 were affected in all by early morning storms that blew across northern Illinois. The city of Chicago and its near west suburbs were among the hardest hit by the lightning and 65-mile-an-hour winds. The Illinois Bureau of Tourism is reaching out to a more diverse population. Jenna Dooley has more.
The Tourism Bureau has updated its annual Soul of Illinois guidebook. The guide directs tourists to spots which highlight African-American history in Illinois. Jane Costner is the Deputy Director of Tourism for Illinois. She says it's a very popular book with some very popular sites.
Underground Railroad is very huge, especially over in Jacksonville. They have some very prominent sites that they do tours of. Bronzeville up in Chicago, which is a beautiful neighborhood that has wonderful art galleries and a rich history of actually a very middle-class African-American community that now is also coming back.
The Department of Tourism is also launching a Spanish-language website. Despite these promotions, state tourism advertisers still say their main target is upper-income women over the age of 35. I'm Jenna Dooley.
For the latest newscast online, go to will.illinois.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Tom Rogers. Sometimes top-secret information can be revealed accidentally, and that's something that can also happen with electronic files. Commentator Amy Guida explains metadata and how laws struggle with it can inform even non-lawyers. Here's this week's edition of Legal Issues in the News.
If I told you that there's a relatively new development in evidence law in the United States, you probably wouldn't be very interested. If I told you that it involves legal pleadings and legal ethics, you'd probably be even less interested. But what if I told you that this issue concerns many of us who use word processing programs to create documents that are then sent on to others? This is one of those times when a mundane ethics and procedural matter in the law has real-life application for many of us. Here's why. Each time someone creates a document or edits a document or inserts comments in a document using a word processing program, those things are noted someplace on the document, often in a place you cannot see. If you've ever accessed a document's properties link, you know that you'll find certain information there. Author, word count, when the document was created and modified, that sort of thing. It's called metadata, and I'll let a court define it for you. Metadata, commonly described as data about data, is defined as information which describes how, when, and by whom it was collected, created, accessed, or modified. The Microsoft website adds that metadata can also contain document revisions, versions, hidden text, and comments. But many people don't know about this cache of information, or they may know about it, but they don't know how much it can reveal. When you transfer a document to somebody else or post it up on the internet, that metadata can go with it. Sometimes it's transferred to someone you don't want to have the information, as in law practice, when the document contains information regarding trial strategy, say. A National Law Journal article reported that track changes comments can sometimes be revealed unintentionally, and that information thought deleted, including sensitive national security information in a pleading put up on a website, can be uncovered easily if you know how to do it. The problem in law practice is really twofold. First, when an attorney sends legal pleadings to another without concern about metadata information and what it contains, and a metadata-savvy attorney on the other side receives that document, would it be ethical to click a couple of times and see what the metadata holds? And if so, should the attorney reveal what's been found? Second, should courts allow opposing parties in a lawsuit to request original electronic files containing all metadata? Courts and state bar association ethics groups are split on the answers. But this metadata thing is relatively new. The National Law Journal, in its February 2008 article, noted that many lawyers don't know about metadata, and that means that many judges probably don't either or don't understand it. That also means that it's an issue that many non-lawyers likely don't know about. The next time you send someone a document or post a document on the internet, think about what else it reveals and whether you want those revelations seen by another set of eyes, be they a lawyer's or not. I'm Amy Guida.
Amy Guida is an assistant professor of journalism and law at the University of Illinois. After yesterday's round of severe weather, we have a few days of dry weather and rather calm weather in central Illinois. At the very least, our meteorologist Ed Kieser says for today it'll be mostly sunny across northern and central Illinois and northwest Indiana. In eastern Indiana and the south, a mix of clouds and sun with scattered showers and thunderstorms. The highs from 67 near Lake Michigan to 87 degrees in far southern Illinois, 77 in Champaign-Urbana. For tonight, partly cloudy in the south, the far south, with a chance of scattered showers early. Elsewhere, though, clear to partly cloudy. And lows from overnight ranging from around 50 in the far north to around 60 far south, 55 in Champaign-Urbana. Sunny and 70 to 80 across the two states, 75 in Champaign-Urbana for tomorrow, clear and 55 tomorrow night. Then on Wednesday, partly to mostly sunny with a very slight chance of a shower or passing thunderstorm in the afternoon and a high of 78. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Monday, June 16th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, The Afternoon Magazine, Agricultural Programming, and other helpful information at our website, will.illinois.edu. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.